It was parents' authority, and then I heard something about the announcement at lunch. They said it is true, parents can be an authority. So I thought, that's a nice new title, Facts with Fishman. I like that. This is actually part two in my parenting series. And last time I talked about the role of parents as counselor and comforter. And I gave a blue handout that gave you some scripture on that. If you have that blue handout, go ahead and take it out today. If you don't worry about it. I'll put everything up on the board that you'll need to know. If you do have the blue handout, you can turn on the back side where it says authority. Tonight, I'm going to be talking about the role of parent as authority. How do you know which role you're in? Basically, if your child is having a problem and your child comes to you, the other day, child said, Daddy, such and such a boy threw a frisbee and hit me in the head or something like that. Okay, that child had a problem. And at that point, Dad was in the role of parent as counselor and comforter. Dad didn't have a problem with the kid's behavior, but the kid had a problem and went to Dad. So we talked about some things that you can say to that child to help that child feel understood, to help that validate that child's experience, how they're seeing things and what their feelings are. Tonight we're going to talk about most of the questions I get from parents, which involve parent as authority. And that's when you're having a problem. Your kid is the one throwing the frisbee at the other kid. And you see it, and you want to know, what am I going to do about this? So that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. If you have the blue handout, I've shown you some Hebrews 12, 6 through 14. We're not going to go through that tonight. I'm going to try and condense about a three-hour workshop into 1 hour. But we'll start on the second point there. I see there's a typo. But that's basically the three characteristics of effective discipline. And that's really what I think about when I'm answering a question on parent as authority. And here's what they are: a clear demand, consistency, and follow through. And these are the three elements that I think can kind of guide your thinking. If there's any questions, feel free to raise your hand as we go. Now, what do I mean by these things? Let's say, for instance, we've got a child in this room tonight who happens to be sitting near the light switch and starts to flicker off and on the light switch, okay? I have a problem with that. It'd be pretty hard for me to talk when the lights are going off and on, off and on. So I could say to the child, Johnny, I'm trying to talk in here. Could you be a good boy and please stop turning the light switch on and off? And if I'm over here and Johnny's over there, Johnny's probably having a really fun time turning off and on the light switch. He may not decide to stop, right? He may just keep going. Please, Johnny, I said, I'm trying to talk. There's a lot of people in here. They really want to learn something tonight. Could you leave the light on? Okay. And the lights run for about a minute, and then Johnny goes back to it. Johnny, did you hear what I said? And the voice starts raising, right? Please leave the lights off. Johnny starts doing it again. Your anger and irritation's building, building, building. And then finally you say, okay, son, get over here. And you walk over to the light switch. You grab him by the arm, you sit him down, and maybe you give him a little spank for good measure. And then you say, don't turn the light switch on or off. Okay, so what I'm saying here is, why don't you just start out with a clear demand, rather than being sugary and polite and asking them a question or say please, give them a clear demand. Leave the lights on, Johnny. That's a clear command. There's a command element to it. It's very brief. It gets to the point. It tells the child what you want. The next one, I'm going to skip to number three, is follow through. Whenever I give a clear command, I want to know that I can actually follow through on that. How can I make Johnny not turn the lights off, right? So what I'd have to do is give the clear demand at the same time that I'm following through, which is actually escorting him maybe to the front of the room on the opposite side of the lights. So I'd walk over and say, "Johnny, come here." So he comes. He doesn't know what I'm talking about yet. If he knows I'm trying to discipline him, he'll run away. I'll just say, "Johnny, come here." Leave the lights on. Come here. And then I'll escort him over. Have a seat. Okay. Sit him down right here. Now what I've done is I've followed through with my clear demand. And the consistency means that I do that on a consistent basis. Every time I'm in a situation like that, I keep doing the same thing. I include the follow through with the clear demand. If I'm not consistent, like let's say I do that, you know, 5 times in a row, and then the 6th time I don't do it, he might think about doing it, but may not do it. The 7th time I don't do it again, he'll go right back over there and start flicking them on and off. So it's this kind of consistency that you need. That's why people stay at slot machines so much, because it's variable reinforcement, you know? Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. And you never know, so you keep playing. You never know when you're gonna win. And it's the same thing with kids. Sometimes you follow through and sometimes you don't. This may be the time where you don't follow through and they can get away with it. And so they'll try. Okay, so these are the 3 elements. Most of the parents don't really have a hard time coming up with a clear demand or a command. Some parents do struggle with this, especially if they came from families where that's all they got were clear demands. They feel really uncomfortable actually making a command to their child. They feel like that means they're mean or something. This is a real hard one, consistency. Especially when you're busy and you've got other kids and there's a lot of other demands on your behavior. This is the one I'm going to talk about a lot tonight, which are techniques for follow-through, because I get this question a lot. Well, how do I follow through on this? I can't always just physically make the person do it. You know, if I've got an adolescent child, a 16-year-old, 200-pound, 6'3" adolescent who's playing with the light switch, it's really hard for me to escort that adolescent over to his chair. So sometimes physically making them do it doesn't work, and you have to come up with some other way of following through. So that's what I'm going to talk about, are some techniques for effective follow-through. So let me do that. First of all, physically making them do it is a very effective one, especially with young children. If the child does not want to get into the bathtub, and the 3-year-old child does not want to get into the bathtub, and it's time for taking a bath, what do you usually do? You just bring them in. You physically put them in the tub. And they kick and scream and cry or whatever, and they get in, and then they start seeing their little toys and everything, and hopefully they'll get over it. Now, if you kind of bring them in, and then they start kicking and screaming, you say, "Okay, fine," and you bring them out, then you're in trouble, right? You don't have that consistency, and you're not following through on it. So physically making them do it is one way. Another thing that you've probably heard a lot about is timeout. A lot of people here heard of timeout. I actually have a little handout. I don't know if I have enough to go around. I only made 30 copies of everything because with Brennan along, our luggage was very, very heavy. And so I had to minimize my copies. I'm going to talk a little bit about timeout because that's such a popular follow-through technique. And I've got a little checklist here on this paper that I'm handing out. On one side it says tangible rewards. We won't be talking about that tonight. We don't really have time, but we will talk a little bit about timeout. And I've just got some tips here for timeout that might be helpful for you. First of all, at what age would you recommend using timeout? It really is up to you. I like to use timeout for kids that are 3 to 8 years old. Which reminds me, I have a book in the bookstore here. It's not by me, it's by Carolyn Webster Stratton, who's devoted her life to studying oppositional defiant children ages 3 to 8. And it's called The Incredible Years, and it's in the bookstore here, and it goes over quite a few of the things that I'm going to be talking about tonight. So I encourage you to get a copy of this. I recommend it to all my parents that I work with. So timeout ages about 3 to 8. First thing is to explain timeout to your child. Let them know what timeout is, how it will be used. And that gets us to the second point, which is define the behaviors that will result in timeout. I happen to be of the opinion that I like to reserve timeout for physically assaultive or destructive behaviors. Otherwise, I think timeout gets overused and then the kid becomes habituated to it. It loses its effectiveness. So I like to recommend timeout for hitting, kicking, biting, banging a hammer into the door or something. Something where they're destroying property or they're destroying another person. That would be a good time to use timeout. Or they're destroying you or attempting to destroy you. And I would just simply say the clear demand: never hit your daddy. Go to timeout now. Always have a time component there, you know. Now, go to timeout. And then I would send them on their way. Have a timer at the location, and have about 1 minute for the years old that they are, up to 5 minutes. So if they're 3 minutes. If they're 4 minutes. If they're 5 minutes. And then 6, 7, 8, 5 minutes. There's really no need to extend it beyond that. It has the same effect, whether they're in 5 minutes or 15 minutes. Use the timeout immediately after misbehavior whenever you can. So if you're in the bank and the child starts beating up their little brother or sister and you're standing in line at the bank, I know the last thing you want to do is leave the bank because you've been standing in line for a long time. But really, it will be more effective in the long run to put that child in timeout at that time. It's going to be a hassle for you the first few times you do it, and it's going to be an inconvenience. But the idea is that if you're consistent with this for 2 to 3 weeks, the behavior will take care of itself in the future. If on a consistent basis that child knows that they're not going to get away with this type of behavior, then that child will cease doing that particular behavior because they're not getting out of it what they were. Okay, keep the timeout area free from distracting things. A lot of parents like to use the bathroom, but it can be kind of dangerous because they hit their head on the sink. A lot of parents like to use the bedroom. Go to your room. And again, that can have a lot of reinforcing types of things, books and toys and whatnot. So I like maybe a hallway. Maybe if there's a hallway in the house where you can put a chair and face a wall. Something where there's not a whole lot of stimulation for them. A wall is not really all that stimulating. Looking at a wall. That's kind of a nice place for a timeout. Ignore your child when your child is in timeout. A lot of times kids will try and talk to you when they're in timeout, or they'll make noises. La 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 la. I don't care that I'm in timeout. You know. You can't make me stop. I'm going to start hitting as soon as I get out. And all this, and they're trying to goad you to say something bad to them, like, you are not going to hit your brother when you get back out of timeout, or something like that. So they're trying to engage you in conversation, or they're trying to get your attention. So when they're in timeout, just ignore the la-la-las, whatever they're saying. If you ignore it and it continues to happen, and they just keep going, I think what I would say to that child is your timeout will begin when you begin to be quiet. So 5 minutes, but the 5 minutes won't start until you're quiet. Okay. Do not editorialize when you enforce timeout. So, child, never hit your younger brother. You know it's not nice to hit your younger brother. It hurts him when you hit him. I've told you this 10 times before, and yet you continue to do it. I try so hard to be a good parent, and how do you do it? You just hit your little brother over and over again. When are you going to learn to stop hitting? It's not good. Editorializing. Meanwhile, the kid's getting your attention after they've misbehaved, and they're not in timeout. And remember, your attention is reinforcing. What I mean by reinforcing is it'll increase the likelihood that the behavior will happen again. So if they hit and then they get your sole attention for 5 minutes, even if it's editorializing, you're increasing the likelihood that that behavior will occur. If very matter-of-factly, you never hit your brother, go to timeout, I'm ignoring them, then I'm not giving them as much attention, and I'm increasing the likelihood that that behavior will decrease. Okay, do not argue with your child when you enforce time out. I did not hit my little brother, right? He hit me first, right? They're trying to argue with you. And I'm going to be talking in a little bit about argument deflectors. So you would simply use an argument deflector, and I'll talk about these in a minute, regardless of whether or who hit who first, go to timeout. And you avoid the argument, you send them to timeout, and then that's it. That's the end of it. Be prepared for testing, especially if you've never done this before. What I mean by testing is they just stand still. They don't just, you know, compliantly walk over to timeout and sit in the chair and do their time a lot of times. A lot of times they'll say, you can't make me go. And then they'll get there and they'll get out of their chair and they'll run all around the house. This kind of testing type of behavior. So if this is something that you don't start, you know, early on, and it's kind of a shock, it's different, there will be this kind of testing. And in fact, what you'll probably see is the behavior will get worse before it gets better. And then hopefully it'll drop down below the baseline. So if this is how frequently they fight, when you start using timeout, the fighting will begin to increase and it will peak out, hopefully, right there after a couple of weeks. And then it'll begin to decline and then hopefully go back down below your baseline. So this is normal. And it's because they really want to know that you mean business and that you're serious and that you're going to be consistent with your discipline. So that can happen. Okay. Hold children responsible for the mess they make when they're going to time out. A lot of children, when they go to time out, you threw the toy at Brian. Never throw a toy at Brian. It's very dangerous. Go to time out. So the kid then takes the whole toy box and just throws it up in the air. And then they go to time out. And you might be thinking, well, they're in there for 5 minutes. I'll just pick it up and put it away. You don't want to do that. You let them do their timeout, their 5 minutes in timeout, and then they come back, and then they pick up the toys, and then put the toys away after that. Whatever mess they make, whatever food they throw around the room or whatever, they then are responsible to pick up after themselves. And there will be consequences for that as well until they get that done. You can also, as a parent, use a timeout for yourself. Johnny, I'm going to take a timeout right now. And I've worked with a parent who had a child who was attention deficit disorder, oppositional defiant disorder, really just a very difficult kid. And he was going crazy, and she called me on the phone. And this is the worst case scenario. You know, he wouldn't sit in his timeout chair. We tried all these things. He wouldn't do it. He was destroying the house. So I basically just told her, you just need to take a timeout. So she just took 10 minutes and got away from him, came back, and then he had calmed down after that. But then she still had to enforce the consequences with him after that. But sometimes you just need to get away and can recompose and say, okay, you know, what am I supposed to be doing now? Because when you get emotionally aroused by your kid, who knows, you know, how your thinking is going to be impaired. Okay, so that's basically timeout. Any questions about timeout? Comments, questions about it so far? Okay, good. Let's move on. Natural and logical consequences. How many people have heard of natural and logical consequences here? Okay, quite a few. Good. I also have a handout on that. 30 copies again. I'll hand those out to you. Basically, this is another technique for follow-through. Natural consequences, whatever results naturally from the child's behavior without you doing any kind of intervention at all. So the children are playing with the baseball in the backyard, and they decide to put home plate next to the fence that somebody lives at that's not home. And when they're not home, they don't like anybody in their yard, let's say. And you tell them, move home plate so you won't get the ball over the fence, because then you'll lose your ball. the kids don't listen, they defy you, you know, they like home plate here, they like having a home run fence, it's kind of cool. Hit the ball over the fence, and they lose the ball. And then that's the natural consequence. No more game. They lost the ball, they can't play anymore. They come to you and they say, can you go in the backyard and get the ball for me? And you've been told already, your neighbor doesn't want you in the yard while they're gone or whatever. So the only thing here that you have to do is stay out of the way. Don't go get the ball for them. They knew what the consequences would be. They lost the ball, now they can't play. Another example is you're playing with a toy, you break the toy, and they say, I want a new one. When you told them if they bang the toy on the table, it's gonna break, and they continue to do it and it broke. And they say, go buy me another one. Well, you just stay out of the way again. So that's the natural consequence. They broke the toy, now they have a broken toy. I've got some others here. A child is late for dinner. They eat cold food, all right? They might say, can you heat it up for me? No. You were late, you eat it cold. I don't want this for dessert, I want something else. Okay, natural consequence is, if you don't want to eat this, you don't get dessert. That's the natural consequence. You don't go overboard to give them something else. You tell them, if you put your dirty clothes out in the hamper, then I will wash them. They don't put the clothes in the hamper, it's on the floor. And then they come to you and say, where's my such and such shirt? I want to wear it today. Well, it wasn't in the hamper. Well, it's right here. Can you wash it? I need it for today. You know, we're going on a field trip, and I'm trying to pick up on Susie or something. I need the shirt. I don't know. You know? So you don't do it there. You don't intervene. It's natural consequences. They forgot to put it in the hamper. They left it on the floor or under the bed or who knows where in their room. And so they don't get the clean shirt. So that would be natural consequences. Okay, logical consequences are consequences that you actually impose on the child, and they're logically related to whatever the rule was that they violated. So, child starts throwing crayons rather than drawing with crayons, you take the crayons away. If the child's in the bathtub and they won't stop splashing water, then the bath ends. If children cannot share a toy, then you take the toy away. Let's talk about adolescents. If an adolescent takes the car out, they forget to put gas in the car, and they don't wash the car, then they don't get the keys to the car next weekend to use the car. That would be a logical consequence. An adolescent kid says, I'll be home at 10, and they come home at 11. They're an hour late. A logical consequence would be the next time they want to go out, they can come home an hour early. So they come home at 9. And if they can come home at 9, then maybe they'll get 9:15, 9:30, and then maybe work their way back up to 10. Or maybe they won't get to go out for 3 nights, and then they'll get 9 o'clock after that. It's up to you, however you want to work that. But it's logically related. Child stays up late, doesn't want to go to bed. Child has a 9 o'clock bedtime. Child, 9 o'clock is wired. Light it up, stay under the bed, make a noise. I'm not going to bed. You can't make me sleep. You're right. Child's right. You can't make a kid sleep. But you can make a kid wake up. Yeah, 6 o'clock in the morning, vacuum. That's a good logical consequence. You always want to try and come up with some follow-through techniques that you are in control of rather than what your child's in control of. And then you'll be much more likely to follow through. I'm in control of whether I take that vacuum in the morning at 6. I can definitely plan on doing that. And I would enjoy doing that. So those are logical consequences. Okay, just a couple of tips. Make sure you can live with the choices. You know, if you say you cannot drive the car for the entire next week, and then you need your adolescent to pick up your 8-year-old at baseball practice that week, it would sure be nice if you didn't say you can't drive the car at all for the whole week, right? It'd be nicer to say you can only drive the car this next week when I give you permission to drive the car this next week, because then you open yourself up for them helping you out by picking up their little brother or something. So make sure when you say what it is, the logical consequence, you don't go back on it. You don't backtrack on it, you see. Maybe you want them to spend the night at a friend's house on Friday night, for instance. Maybe you'd like to have that time together with your spouse, and so that's not going to be the consequence that you choose. Maybe you'll choose something else. Okay. Give your child choices ahead of time. This is kind of letting them know what the consequences will be beforehand, before they actually mess up, in a sense. If you don't share your toys, then you won't get to play with them, would be an example of that. Or if you don't, either you get dressed by 8, or you will have no breakfast, and you'll get dressed in the car, you know. So the kids, you know, taking their time getting dressed, you need to get them out of the house by 8 or 7:30 or whatever, they're not dressed. The follow-through is, we're leaving at 7:45, with you, clothed or unclothed. And so you throw them into the van, and you throw the clothes in behind them, you know. And, okay, get dressed, you know, and driving around, trying to put the clothes on. Probably not going to go to school naked, you know, probably figure out a way to get dressed real fast at that point. Okay, stay really calm and matter-of-fact in your attitude. This is really important. When you're imposing a consequence, if you start raising your voice and sounding real authoritative, I think you can be an authority without sounding like what we would think of as authoritative. So we can just very matter-of-factly say, you know, that's fine that you didn't put that's fine that you chose not to come home on time, but that means that you're not going to be able to go out tomorrow night. Very matter-of-factly. Then the child is probably going to argue back, and I'll get to arguing in a minute, I promise, and then you can go from there. So stay matter-of-fact. Keep consequences short and to the point. You don't need to ground the kid for 3 months, you know. I like it when a kid can wake up every day and say, hey, it's a new day, you know. I can make it work today. Yesterday was a bad day, you know. I lost everything, you know. But today I can make it work, you know. Quickly offer the child ways of earning the privileges back. So, let's say, for instance, they take their bicycle and they try and jump over the neighbor's flower garden with their bicycle. Okay, that's against the rules. If you do that again, you're going to lose your bike. And they say, wow, it's really fun. I'll take this chance. Maybe they won't really take my bike away. And they jump and they land right in the flower garden, crush all the flowers. Okay, that's it. Bike's away. Bike will be away. How long is the bike? And they might say, well, how long is it going to be away? By the way, you lock up the bike. That's follow through. Because even when you're not there, then you know it's locked up and you've got the key or the combination. They can't get at it. So you say, well, okay, now look. For the next 3 days or the next 4 days or whatever, if you do your chores in the house and you show me that you're responsible and you're doing what I ask you to do, and you do that for 4 days in a row, then you'll get your bike back. Because I asked you not to go into the flower garden. You didn't listen to what I said. Now I want you to listen to what I'm saying for the next 4 days when I ask you to do something, and then you'll get your bike back. So they know that they can get their bike back by earning the bike back. Not by just doing their time, but by actually being proactive and doing something. So the first day you tell them to do something, they do it. The second day you tell them to do something, they don't do it. The next day they're back to one. You've got to get 3 in a row for me. You've got to get 3 days in a row. Okay? Today's a new day. I can make it 1. Tomorrow I can make it 2, then I can make it 3 and get my bike back. If I go back in the flower garden with the bike gets taken away again. You know, that's the consequence. But I like the idea of kids trying to earn back privileges rather than kids just doing their time. Okay. You say something mean to your neighbor, and you say, now write a letter of apology, and then you can have this privilege back of being able to play outside, because the kid was playing outside when they said something mean to the neighbor. So as soon as that letter is written, then they get to play outside. So they're earning the privilege of playing outside by doing the consequence. That's what I mean by that. Okay, pre-MAC principle. This works really well with adolescents. This is also called the when-then principle. When, then. Some people call it grandmother's rule. This works good, like, for instance, kid, adolescent wants to go to the beach. Well, I'm thinking beach because I live by the beach. Adolescent wants to go to the movies, all right? When you clean your room, then you can go to the movies, okay? So that way, they're motivated to go to the movies. They're not real motivated to clean their room, but they'll still clean their room because they want to go to the movies. And so as soon as it's clean, then they're out. So what you can do is wait until you know your child or adolescent's going to ask you, can you give me a ride down to the mall or something or like that? And you know it's coming. That's a good time then to say, well, when you clean your room, then I'll give you the ride. Rather than walking into the room and saying, you know, this room is really messy, you need to clean it up. You may not have a real follow through. Like I said, you might not be able to take a big adolescent and physically make them clean their room up. But if you've got something on, like whenever it's done, then you can do this. Now you've got a follow through that you're in control over. Okay. Tangible rewards and reinforcing alternative pro-social behavior. Okay. I'll just say rewarding positive behavior. So this can be very effective. Like, let's say you have a child, when you go to the grocery store, this child runs up and down the aisles and takes things and throws in the cart that you don't want and chases their brother or sister around and just really drives you nuts in the grocery store. Think about, what is the alternative positive behavior? Well, you're staying by my side, you're keeping your hand off the shelves, and you're not fighting with your brother or sister. So that's the positive behavior. So now maybe I can reward that. So I break it down into smaller chunks and I say, okay, every aisle where you got your hands to yourself, you're not fighting, you're not grabbing things from the aisle, you stay relatively in the vicinity of me, I'll give you a dime or a quarter or whatever at the end of that aisle. And so they ka-chink, they get their dime. Go down the next aisle, ka-chink, they get another dime. And so they're getting positively reinforced each aisle by the end of the grocery store, depending on how many aisles you go down. You know, you've got $1, $2, I don't know. And then they can buy something for themselves from the grocery store. So that would be a real simple example of how you can reward positive behavior. Also, this would be actually setting up a program for a kid. You don't even have to do that. The kid doesn't even have to be aware of what's going on. If they're really well behaved on the first aisle, you could just simply say to them, socially, we call it social praise. Hey, you know, I really like the way that you were quiet, you kept your hands to yourself, and you stayed near me on this aisle. I really appreciate that. It makes it easier for me. You're being a really good boy today, or whatever. That's just social praise, but it still is reinforcing the positive behavior. And that's something that you can do if you're uncomfortable with material reinforcers, like money or something like that. So, a lot of people say, you've heard the expression, catch them being good, right? So the child is playing with a friend and everything's going well and they're laughing and having a great time. And you just happen to walk by and notice that things are going really well. And so you just kind of intervene and just very quickly, concisely, and shortly say, you're playing very nicely together. I like the way you're sharing the car with each other. I think that's really neat. And so you're giving them attention and positive words for the pro-social behavior, because it might be a lot easier to do that than it would be to, once they get into the fight and they're tugging on the toy or something, to then stop that. So that's basically what we found in psychology. It's a lot easier to reinforce positive behavior than to eliminate negative behavior. The last one is just simply ignoring. Child sticks their tongue out at you or something as they're going to time out. Do not stick that tongue out at me or something like that, you can say. That's a pretty tough one to follow through on. Lasso the tongue, something like that, I don't know. It's pretty hard, you know. You know, they've got control over it, you don't. So things like that, you might just try to ignore it. You know, just simply ignore it like you didn't even see it. And the idea being that if they're not getting your attention, hopefully they'll give up that little tactic after a while. Ignoring is always a good first line, you know, because it doesn't take a lot of energy to ignore, you know. A lot of these other follow-through techniques involve some kind of sacrifice or energy on your part. So I would always like to start with some certain kind of negative behavior, as long as nobody's getting hurt or something, by just ignoring it. Okay, so those are some ideas that I have about follow-through. And next I'm going to talk about avoiding arguments. I think you'll like this. But before I get into avoiding arguments, any questions about any of the techniques to follow through? I know I'm kind of quick. Yeah.
The mother says, wait till daddy gets home, what happens?
If the mother says, wait till daddy gets home, I don't like wait till daddy gets home because I like immediate consequences, you see. And so what I would like is parents work together and know beforehand, if our kid does this, you know, if they refuse to eat their dinner, what's going to be the consequence? Or if they refuse to do their homework, that might be a better one because dad's not home yet, mom's there, or dad's home and mom's not home from work yet, or whatever. One parent is there and it's time for the child to do homework. And so the child says, I'm not doing my homework. You can't make me, and goes out and play. And then you say, as they're going out the door, wait till your daddy gets home. I don't really like that. What I'd rather say is mom and dad work together, and the idea is homework first, then play. And as they're running out the door, well, you may have to be running after them. Okay? And if they're too big to catch or too fast to catch, eventually they're going to come back home, right? Eventually they get tired or hungry. And when they do come back home, then you've got a logical consequence that you can use. Okay, you've just lost your privileges for 24 hours. And this is how I'm going to give them back to you. Okay? Yeah.
I'm a little unclear about the 30-man follow-through. I guess part of that, well, two areas. One of them is being sure in the first place that you know that what they did was something they shouldn't do when you talk mm-hmm. about the lights. Yeah. For instance, if they didn't realize you were doing this presentation,
right.
Would you still do the follow-through other than stop doing the lights? And then the other is... I'm not used to that as, mm-hmm. as something, technique. How are you knowing whether they're following what you're asking them to do, or just they don't have a chance because you've already,
right.
you know, you've just moved them, so
right.
what are you accomplishing as far as them following directions,
right.
unless it's, you only do that when they know they're not doing something they're supposed to do.
Right, right. So, you know, maybe they are, I'm trying to think of an example of something they would do that they wouldn't know. Maybe they put on a certain shirt to wear to school that you don't think is appropriate to wear to school, but you've never discussed that beforehand, that that's inappropriate. The first time, you're going to have to come up with the rule. You kind of come up with rules as you go,
right.
as you see things that you don't particularly like or you have a problem with. So at that point in time, I wouldn't discipline them for that. I'd say, let's sit down and talk about clothing. And what we feel is appropriate clothing, what we feel is not appropriate clothing. And you have that conversation after you've seen something where you feel is inappropriate. And then, if they continue to do it, now they know what the clear rule is, you know. With the lights, I would simply say the first time, you know, leave the lights alone. And then if they continue to do it, then I'm going to walk over and say, turn off the light. Leave the lights on now, and then escort them over. The very first time I say, leave the lights alone, they may comply. And then that's fine. There's no discipline or consequence or anything like that. Yeah. And so that tells you, as parents, some things you might want to just anticipate. So when your adolescent turns 16 and it's time for them to use a car, you sit down and you talk about all the things that can go wrong with them using the car and what the consequences will be. Maybe you have a set of driving rules, in a sense, that you go over with them before you hand over the keys for the first time. Okay, any other questions? Yeah, in the back.
I just wanted to comment that when you said leave the lights alone mm-hmm. as opposed to quit flipping the lights on
right.
and off. And,
right.
and
right.
I've been told and I've read where when you tell children not to do something,
right.
all they hear is what you're saying not for them to do
right.
it and not the not do it.
Yeah. Good point. The point is, be positive, emphasize the positive rather than say, don't do the negative. So if your kid is fighting with a brother, you say, keep your hands to yourself. You know, that would be better than never hit your brother or sister or whatever. Sometimes you can't always do that. Sometimes you can't always come up with a positive that counteracts the negative. And you do have to say, never hit your brother or sister. But as much as possible, you could say, keep the toys in the toy box, rather than stop spilling the toys on the floor. So that point is well taken. Okay, any others, questions about follow-through? Okay, avoiding arguments. This is really fun, because a lot of times when you impose the consequence, they're going to try and get out of the consequence, or when you state the rule, they're going to try and get out of the rule, because kids want to do what they want to do. I mean, it's just like adults, you know? If we could make more money at our job, we would do whatever it takes. What am I saying? If we could take the day off work, and our boss wouldn't say anything to us about it, and we'd have no consequences for doing, a lot of us would take the day off work. And that's how kids are too. So they're trying to get what they can, basically. So they're gonna sometimes try and manipulate out of the rule or manipulate out of the consequence. And this is where they will argue to do that. So let's say, for instance, you've got an adolescent that wants to go to a party on Friday night. And they say, they're 16 years old, my friend's having a party. And you say, who's having the party? Roger's having it. Is there going to be an adult there? I don't know. Who is Roger? and you don't know who Roger is, and you just get a sneaking suspicion. This is not the kind of party that you want to be sending your kid to. So you say, no, you're not going to the party. So, you know, you can anticipate what your adolescent's response is going to be. Anybody give me any ideas on what the adolescent would say?
Everyone's
going to be there. Okay. So now at this point, hopefully the alarm goes off in your head. I've already told them they can't go. That's the rule. I'll follow through on that on Friday night. Today's Tuesday. I don't need to follow through on this until Friday. So I'm not going to worry about that, and I'll be consistent with this, you know, on a consistent basis. But right now, they're just trying to argue with me, okay? So I need to get out of the argument. So I would use an argument deflector, and I'll just write them up here on the board for you, what they are. The argument deflectors are, nevertheless, regardless, whether or not is a good one. And then the last one is what we call the sponge, because it soaks up the argument, and that's anything else. Okay, so who would like to have an argument with me? Any volunteers? Any people that want to relive their adolescence? Be 16 years old again? Anybody here? Do we have any adolescents here? Anybody? Just raise your hand so I know who I'm talking. Okay. Okay. Like I said, you can't go to the party Friday night.
Well, all my friends are going to be there.
Okay. Whether your friends are going to be there or not, there's going to be no. I don't know. There's going to be adult supervision there. I don't know who Roger is. Friday night, we've got a family activity planned. You're not going Friday night.
What if I just go for a couple hours?
Okay. You're not going to the party at all. Not even for a couple of hours.
Well, what are you worried about? The parents not being there, or if there's going to be parents there?
Okay. Like I said before, I don't know there's going to be parental supervision. Roger, I don't know who he is. It's not the kind of party that I'm fond of you going to. You're doing a good job, by the way. It's not the kind of party that I'm fond of. You can't go to the party.
Okay, what if we call him and see if there's going to be parents here?
Okay. Whether or not you call and find out who's parents, now I'm on track. Whether or not you call and find out who's parents or not, you're not going to the party on Friday.
Don't you trust me?
Okay. Regardless of whether you think I trust you, you're not going to the party on Friday night.
I'm not going to this party, am I?
Be a little more defiant. Be a little more defiant, and we get to the last one. So, maybe I'm going to go anyways. Maybe you can say that.
Well, I'm going to go anyway.
Anything else? See, because yeah, he says, I'm going to go anyways. It's Tuesday, you know? The party's not till Friday. So I'll make sure he doesn't get to that party on Friday. So for now, I just say anything else. He wants the last word, I give it to him. But I've still got the rule. I've still got what I want here. And when I say anything else, they'll just keep talking. But if I just keep saying anything else, there's no argument, right? Because it takes two people to argue. And so this will really work for you, believe me. They won't argue. Believe me, they won't argue because they won't get anywhere with you when they argue. It will be futile for them to argue. Because you'll just say, yeah, okay, anything else? Uh-huh. You see, you can do this. Let's do it. We'll just do it with something else. Let's do another one. Anything that you're dealing with your parents where they start to argue with you or where they're not complying. Anybody have any examples? A bunch of, you know, perfect kids here? Anybody have any adolescents that like to argue? Oh, homework, okay. All right. So you sit down with them and you say, look, you know, I noticed in your report card you got a D in math. We're going to put together this program. And what it is on a daily basis, I want you to write down what your homework assignment is in math. So you come home, bring your math home, book home every day, whether or not you have homework.
What if I forget?
And you do your, let me finish, okay. And you do your homework every day.
Teenagers wouldn't let you finish.
Oh yeah, they will. I mean, I'd say that to a teenager. I'd say, let me finish. Okay. And then they'd let me finish. That's okay. And then when you finish your homework, then you can have your free time to listen to the stereo, whatever you want to do. Go ahead and say what you said.
What did I say? I forgot.
What if I forget my book?
What if I forget?
Okay, if you forget to bring your book, then you lose your privileges for that day. And the next day, you can get your privileges back by bringing your book home and doing your assignment for the previous day and that day. And as soon as both assignments are done, then you get all your privileges. Okay, now you're going to start arguing. Go ahead and argue.
I don't know.
Fair.
Okay, whether you think
that's
it's fair.
Not fair.
Okay, whether. Okay, the first time, I may not just go straight to this. I may actually give some rationale the first time. So I might say, well, I think it is fair because you're getting a D in math, and I think it's time that we get a little bit more active in helping you to get your homework done.
But I'm supposed to be responsible for my work. I should be able to do my homework when I want to do my homework.
Okay. Whether or not you think that's true, that you're responsible or that you're able to do your homework and do it on your own schedule, this is what we're going to do for the next semester. We're going to have you do your homework first, I'm going to monitor it, and then you're going to get to have your privileges, the TV and the stereo, using the telephone to talk to your girlfriend, that sort of thing. Man, you want to argue back?
But I don't understand the math.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Whether or not you understand your math, this is what you're going to do. And we can talk about a problem that you're having with your math at a later time, but right now I'm just explaining to you what the program is.
Okay. Well, what's the point? I bring the book home and I don't understand any of it.
Okay. Whether or not you think you know how to do the problems, this is going to be the program that we're going to do.
Well, I'll just sit there and stare at the page.
Okay.
I won't know what to do.
Okay.
It's not the teacher's fault. Okay. The teacher's the one that doesn't teach us how to do it.
Regardless of whether you know what to do, regardless if you think it's the teacher's fault, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do your homework with you every day after school. I'll help you do it. And then you can have your privileges. Okay. Anything else? You guys are the best arguers I've ever seen. Okay, so that's how it works. That's an arguing. Okay, the only other point I want to make, and before I take some questions, is parents need to work together. Or whoever's in the household that's managing this child's behavior needs to work together. That may not be parents, that may be grandparents, that may be aunt, uncle. Whoever is involved in disciplining this child, they need to be on the same team, they need to be communicating with one another so that the child's favorite tactic of divide and conquer does not occur, you see. So, Dad, can I go out and play? Yeah, I guess so, you know? And Mom comes home, what do you mean he didn't do his homework? Oh, I didn't know he was supposed to do his homework before he played. You know, we didn't communicate about that. So whenever you put together some kind of a program or a rule or a discipline or a consequence you're gonna use for something, make sure that you're doing the same thing. And that's gonna take a little bit extra energy, but believe me, it'll create this kind of consistency that, will help the behavior.
That's a tough one when it's a separate household.
Oh, yeah. The very first thing, because I work with a lot of couples, and I work with couples who are going to get a divorce. And the very first thing I say to them when they're talking about divorce is, let me just tell you, do you happen to know what the single variable is that predicts best what the child's adjustment is going to be to divorce? Do you happen to know that? No, I don't know what that is. Well, here's what it is. Parents cooperating together. That is number one thing. So, right now, before it's too late, let me tell you, I know you don't like this person, you may resent them or whatever, but watch what you say and make sure you cooperate, okay? And I mean, that's the best I can do at the outset. And sure, when you're in separate households, it's not going to be totally consistent. You just do the best you can, basically. Sometimes you need to get a third person in there to mediate, too. Yeah. Okay, so that's all I had to say. Any questions now? Any kind of question? Yeah.
Temper tantrums.
Okay, temper tantrums.
It's uncontrollable. Time off, and you might be in a public place, and they just scream, and they're not
yeah.
going to be quiet.
Right. Make sure they don't hurt themselves. Make sure they don't hurt anybody else or destroy any property, and then let it run its course.
Yeah. It's so hard.
It's so hard, yeah. But that's the best we've come up with. That's the best we know. That's the best we know.
How about the mace?
Electric shock? No. Yeah. Squirt him with water? No.
Well, what about punishing the child later if he has, or would that be a typical inclination?
I would only punish them if they destroyed some property or they hit somebody else or they did something while having the tantrum. Like, let's say they had a tantrum and they started throwing their toys. Then I would make them pick up their toys, you know. If they broke something, I'd have them fix it. If they spilled something, I'd have them clean it up. So that's what I would do. But otherwise, I would just let them have the tantrum and get through it and try and ignore it as much as I can while kind of keeping an eye on safety issues, and then hope that it's just a spirited child who has a certain temperament and hopefully will, you know, grow out of it, basically. After a while, when they get older and older, there's going to be a point in time where they're going to stop, you know, where their peers are just going to, they're not going to put up with that. Yeah.
What about whining? When, but mom, and
yeah.
they just don't accept what you've said.
Yeah.
Continue.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's kind of like arguing, whining. You know, like let's say we're gonna go to grandma's house, you know, but I don't want to go to grandma's house. We always go there. I'd rather play, you know. Is that kind of what you're talking about? Okay. Simply just do what you're going to do. And ignore the whining. Simply just get them in the car, buckle them up, and start driving to grandma's house. But I think what happens sometimes is when they whine, that bothers us. It bothers us internally, and somehow we question, is it really okay to go to grandma's house? You know? and then we start reasoning with them. Here's why we're going to grandma's house. You know, grandma's a nice lady. She got you a good birthday present. There's lots of toys to play with. We're going to have cookies when we get there. You know, I'm not into that. I'm into stick them in the car and go, you know. And just basically, you're just not dealing with the whining in that sense, you know.
So just ignore it.
Well, kind of ignore it. Yeah, get in there. I mean, now let's say they're whining about going to grandma's house, and this is really unusual behavior for this child. This child doesn't usually whine about going to grandma's house. Then I'm going to talk to them, because then I want to know why they don't want to go to grandma's house. You know, what happened at grandma's house last time we were there? You know, or maybe they're not feeling well. Maybe they have a fever. Or maybe there is something that I need to explore. But if you know that this is just garden variety whining that your child tends to do, then I'm just going to stick to whatever I'm doing and ignore it that way. Yeah. There was a hand up. Yeah, in the back. Oh, okay. Right here.
As a word to tell them when they're whining like that, I won't talk to you or I won't listen to you. until you stop it.
No, I wouldn't do that. I would just not listen to them. I wouldn't say to them, I'm not going to listen to you when you talk to me that way. Because then you're just basically saying, come on, let's fight. You know, let's get into a power struggle. Instead, what I would just do is get my stuff together and continue to go about my business of going to grandma's house. And they get the message that I'm not going to listen to them without me challenging their sense of power in the world or something, you know? Because once they hear me say that, it's almost like they feel like they have to respond somehow, you know? Back. Yeah.
Similar thing, but let's say you're trying to get them to go down the hallway to the room, and they just say, no, I'm not going to do it, sit down or whatever.
Yeah.
When they just refuse to, and they're not going to budge unless you carry them down there.
Yeah, I would say, here we go. You know, we're going into the room now. You know, and again, if they're younger, that works. If they're older, you see, then I would say, it depends what's going on in the room, I guess, or something like that, you know. You need to get into the room now, and let's say they get there late, and so maybe it's a class that they're taking or something, and they miss the first 10 minutes of class. After the class is over, maybe they can stay 10 minutes late and make up whatever time they missed by staying late. So that after the class, when it's time to go home and have free time, now they have 10 minutes less free time because they're 10 minutes late for the class. Or you can double it, you know, okay, you're 10 minutes late, you're gonna lose 20 minutes of your free time when we get home. You know, something like that. Some kind of a logical consequence would work better for an adolescent who's too big to carry. But if they're young enough, yeah, I would just escort them. That, I think that's very easy. And if you start when they're young, then they understand that when you give the demand, you follow through on it. And so hopefully by the time they're an adolescent, when you give the demand, they're used to being compliant to your demands. I always tell a parent, don't give a demand unless you know you can follow through on it. So don't say get into the room to a little kid when you're not prepared to go over there and take them in the room. Because every time you give a demand where you're not able to follow through, diminish your own authority. What was the word?
Contradict.
You contradict your authority. You're basically saying, I don't have control over you. And you diminish it. Okay, yeah.
Buddy, what about mouthiness? What do you think is, I think it's amazing sometimes when you hear your children speak to their parents. And what is your recommendation for respect? Mm-hmm. I mean, be it little or whatever, because like you said, I believe that if they do that when they're little, you get really in trouble when they're adolescents.
Yeah. With the little people, you know, you're doing a lot more teaching, you know, that they just may not know that that's not an appropriate way to talk, you know, so you're teaching them more in terms of, okay, that this is polite and this is not polite. That's not polite. And so you're in more of a teaching mode. With an adolescent, they're just testing the waters, you know, being disrespectful. So what I would do is I would just walk out of the room. I would just walk out of the room and not talk to them. And then when they come back in, if they start talking to me in a polite way, then I'll talk to them. What I think some parents do is they get really upset. They walk into another room. Adolescent comes back in, and now the adolescent's ready to be civil, and the parent is still upset. And they say, I'm not talking to you now. Get out of here. Now, tomorrow, the adolescent, is the adolescent more or less likely to be disrespectful?
More
likely. So the problem increases. Okay. So that's kind of how I would handle it.
Thank you.
Okay. You mentioned next day or follow up when dad gets home. Issues like that. If the homework hasn't been done, the kid's outside playing, now dad comes home, mom says, or dad says, wait a minute.
Right.
No, this was the rule.
Right.
Now, consequences for not doing the homework and for manipulating mom, or?
No, not consequences for manipulating mom, because I want mom to appear strong and I want mom and dad to work together. So I'm dad, I come home, I see the kids playing, I notice the work's not done. Mom, let's talk. We get together, we say, okay, what happened? Mom says, you know, I tried to chase him, but I got the baby, I couldn't chase him, he just went outside, there's nothing I could do. Okay, fine. What are we gonna do now? Well, let's get him in, and then we'll get him to start doing his homework, and we're not going to let him watch TV. We're not going to let him listen to his stereo. We're not going to have him talk to his friends until that homework is done. And then tomorrow, we're going to make sure, and then this weekend, when he wants to go away to such and such a place, he's not going to get that privilege as well, because not only did he not do his homework first, but then he defied he didn't even do the consequence, you see. He went out and played soon, so he'll lose that. And so you come together as a united front and say, okay, we've been discussing, you know, you knew you were supposed to do your homework, you went outside, mom tried to call you back in and you stayed out there, and then you lay it down together. Because you want that kid to get the idea that mom and dad are united front, they both have power, and not give the kid, if you say, well, you manipulated mom, so you have this consequence, now you give the idea, yeah, I can manipulate mom. Dad's the only one I have to worry about. So you don't want to give the kid that message. Yeah.
This goes a little bit back to mouthiness.
Yeah.
And a three-year-old saying no, but you can make them do what you want them to do.
Yeah.
You ignore that.
Right.
Is there some point where, you know, when they get to be 6, 7, they're still saying that it's disrespectful? You don't ignore it, you do respond to what they say, or you just keep ignoring it? By then they're not saying it anymore?
Well, yeah, of course you hope that, but the situation is, you may have to have another... by the time they're 6 years old, you're saying you might not be able to physically make them do it? Is that what you're saying? Or
well,
they say no? Give me an example specifically.
Well, I guess I'm just saying, you know, when they're a 3-year-old,
okay,
you maybe they don't know exactly what they're saying. They
right.
just sort of say no without
right.
thinking.
Right.
When they're 6 and you ask them to do something, uh-huh. you know, you could still physically
right.
make them, but it seems inappropriate that they're still saying no to you just to be kind of
uh-huh.
smart.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, one thing you can do is just give them choices, you know. You can, you know, rather than saying, you know, you need to eat your dinner, and then they say, no, I'm not going to eat my dinner, you can just simply say to them, okay, that's fine. You can choose to eat your dinner, or you can choose not to eat your dinner, and you won't get to eat anything else. It's your choice.
Okay.
So with a kid who's still saying no at that age, you can just give them choices.
Mm-hmm.
You can do this or that, you know. And that might be helpful as a way of dealing with it. Or use the pre-nat principle. Okay, clean your room. No, I won't clean my room. Okay, that's fine. You don't have to clean your room. But you're not going to get to do this until you clean your room. Okay, whenever you decide to clean it, then you're going to get this. So you can work with that type of a child who immediately bucks up no against whatever you say. Give them a sense of having more power. But in a sense, you're still in control, right? You're still... the authority, and if the carrot's good enough afterwards, the room will get clean. Nintendo or something like that, you know, Sega, whatever, computer, yeah.
Is it okay, like, if you have an adolescence and one of the parents immediately responds to a problem with a consequence?
Yeah.
And then later on, the other parent comes in, hears about it, and says, well, did you think of this or did you think
right.
of that? And the other parent goes, well, no, I didn't consider
right.
that.
Right.
Is it okay then for them to discuss, go back to the child and say,
uh-huh.
you know, your dad said this right away, but we've kind of talked
yeah.
about it, and we'll
yeah.
change that a little bit for
yeah.
you.
Yeah. That's a really good question, and there's no one answer to that. If what the one parent said is somewhat close to what you want to go with, I would just leave it so as not to hurt your authority, you know. But if it's really far, then it's just a confession. Hey, you know, I reacted emotionally. I was really impulsive with laying down this consequence. We've talked about it, and now this is what we've decided to do, you know. So if it's way out there, but if it's kind of close, you want to kind of give the kids the sense that you're not going to go back on what you say, you know? So that's a tension. Does that answer?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, we are out of time. We're over time, actually. I will stick around
great.
For other questions, though. But I just know I need to end now.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any more handouts. If you need a handout, put your name here and I'll send